Hi, friends, and welcome to what is, to me, an extremely exciting episode of the End of Sport podcast. My name is Nathan Coleman Lamb, and I am joined today by Johanna Mellis. Hi, Johanna.
Hi.
I mean, we're both thrilled to share with you today a conversation that we were privileged to have with the General Counsel of the National Labor Relations Board, Jennifer Abruzzo. And so we are shortly going to throw it to that conversation, but because we had understandably a much more limited amount of time than we usually take advantage of on this show with our guest, we want to kind of round out that conversation with some context. We didn't want to waste the time we had with her on the kind of context that I think is still useful to understand the issues around the memo that the General Counsel issued around the labor rights of college athletes, right? So I think a big part of this is we want to be able to understand what the memo is, and we're going to take you through some of that document itself so you can sort of see what the General Counsel actually wrote. We want to provide a little bit of context for what the NLRB does. And then we're going to share with you the conversation we had with the General Counsel, where we asked her some of the questions that were really lingering for us in terms of how one would go about as a college athlete taking advantage of her memo, and some of the more technical nuances in terms of who it includes and how it includes them. And then we're going to finish today with a conversation Johanna and I have, sort of trying to unpack for ourselves then the conversation that we had with the General Counsel and sort of our lingering analysis of the whole situation. So before we get into it, you know, I think one question that may not be familiar to everyone is, what is the NLRB? The National Labor Relations Board is a federal agency that enforces the right of private sector employees to organize and fight for and defend their working conditions under the terms of the NLRA, or the National Labor Relations Act. The President of the United States appoints 5 members to the NLRB board, and those members are the ones empowered to decide cases ultimately. And every year, one of those members comes up kind of for renewal or replacement. The General Counsel is appointed as well by the President and is independent from the board and responsible for overseeing the 26 field offices of the NLRB and for prosecuting cases. And I think it's important to understand that this field office model, like the entire country of the United States, is divided into these 26 field offices. And if a person is interested in filing some kind of complaint or organizing, they go through the field offices. That's the way that it operates. Jennifer Abruzzo is President Biden's appointment as the General Counsel for the National Labor Relations Board, where she has previously served in various capacities for almost 23 years. Prior to her appointment, she served as the Special Counsel for Strategic Initiatives for Communications Workers of America. She is also the author of a September 29th memo entitled Statutory Rights of Players at Academic Institutions, Student Athletes, Under the National Labor Relations Act. On September 29th, 2021, the General Counsel of the NLRB, Jennifer Abruzzo, issued a memo entitled Statutory Rights of Players at Academic Institutions, Student Athletes, Under the National Labor Relations Act. In that memo, General Counsel Abruzzo argued, and I quote, "On January 31st, 2017, the Office of the General Counsel issued GC 1701, which addressed various issues regarding the statutory rights of university faculty and/or students under the National Labor Relations Act. That memo summarized pertinent representation case decisions and was intended to serve as a guide for employers, labor unions, and employees regarding how the Office of the General Counsel intended to apply those cases in the unfair labor practice arena. GC 1701 was later rescinded by GC 1802. This memo reinstates GC 1701 to the extent it is consistent with this memo. And Additionally, provides updated guidance regarding my prosecutorial position that certain players at academic institutions are employees under the Act. Further, it explains that, where appropriate, I will allege that misclassifying such employees as mere, quote, student athletes and leading them to believe that they do not have statutory protections is a violation of Section 18A1 of the Act. Players at academic institutions perform services for their colleges and the NCAA in return for compensation and subject to their control. Most notably, as GC 1701 described, the following evidence presented in Northwestern University supported that finding. The athletes play football, perform a service for the university and the NCAA, thereby generating tens of millions of dollars in profit and providing an immeasurable positive impact on the university's reputation, which in turn boosts student applications and alumni financial donations. The football players received significant compensation, including up to $76,000 per year, covering their tuition, fees, room, board, and books, and a stipend covering additional expenses such as travel and childcare. The NCAA controls the players' terms and conditions of employment, including maximum number of practice and competition hours, scholarship eligibility, limits on compensation, minimum grade point average, and restrictions on gifts and benefits players may accept, and ensures compliance with those rules through its Compliance Assistance Program. The university controls the manner and means of the players' work on the field and various facets of the players' daily lives to ensure compliance with NCAA rules. For example, the university maintains detailed itineraries regarding the players' daily activities and football training, enforces the NCAA's minimum GPA requirement, and penalizes players for any college or NCAA infractions, which could result in removal from the team and loss of their scholarship. In short, GC 1701 concludes, and this memo reiterates, that the scholarship football players at issue in Northwestern University clearly satisfy the broad Section 2.3 definition of employee and the common law test. Therefore, those football players and other similarly situated players at academic institutions should be protected by Section 7 when they act concertedly to speak out about their terms and conditions of employment, or to self-organize, regardless of whether the board ultimately certifies a bargaining unit. In addition, because those players at academic institutions are employees under the Act, misclassifying them as student athletes and leading them to believe that they are not entitled to the Act's protection has a chilling effect on Section 7 activity. Therefore, in appropriate cases, I will pursue an independent violation of Section 8A1 of the Act where an employer misclassifies players at academic institutions as student athletes. Accordingly, cases involving the misclassification of players at academic institutions should be submitted to advice. That approach is consistent with GC 2104, in which I requested that all cases involving the applicability of Velux Express Incorporated, in which the board refused to find a violation based on the employer having misclassified drivers as independent contractors, be submitted to advice. In 2020, activism among players at academic institutions skyrocketed, along with the national attention to social justice issues following the murder of George Floyd and concerns regarding health and safety in the face of the COVID-19 pandemic. For example, players at academic institutions across the country banded together to speak out about racism at their colleges and to demand change, and some threatened to withhold their services in response to their coaches' actions after George Floyd's murder. Activism concerning such racial justice issues, including openly supporting the Black Lives Matter movement, directly concerns terms and conditions of employment and is protected concerted activity. College football players also join together using the monikers We Are United and We Want to Play to express their desire to play the 2020 season despite the ongoing pandemic, while demanding adequate safety protocols and an opt-out option for players who chose not to play.
those groups further sought open communication between players and university and NCAA leadership, and ultimately a college football players association to represent them. Moreover, players at academic institutions have gained more power as they better understand their value in generating billions of dollars in revenue for their colleges and universities, athletic conferences, and the NCAA. And this increased activism and demand for fair treatment has been met with greater support from some coaches, fans, and school administrators. Players at academic institutions who engage in concerted activities to improve their working conditions have the right to be protected from retaliation.
General Counsel Jennifer Abruzzo, it is such a pleasure to have you with us on the show today. And I want to jump right into our questions because we don't have too much time together. The first thing I want to ask you is, you know, I think it might surprise some people that college sport would be a priority for someone in your position. Can you explain why you have chosen to issue a memo on this subject?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me. Well, I had been with the agency for 23 years until December of 2017. And during the time, the latter time that I was in the office of the general counsel as deputy general counsel, we issued a series of memos. And one such memo was GC 1701, which we put out after the board members issued a decision which punted, for lack of a better word, on whether or not football players at Northwestern University were statutory employees. In the office of the general counsel, both the general counsel, Dick Griffin, and myself felt that they were employees, and we issued a memo to that effect. And then that memo was rescinded by my predecessor. So after my Senate confirmation and arrival back to the NLRB on July 22nd of this year, I certainly wanted to reinstate and update that memo to reflect the position that we had taken in 2017, which was that Northwestern players were statutory employees. And frankly, you know, our position has only been bolstered by events that have occurred since that time frame.
Excellent. And, you know, since we are not legal scholars or lawyers, and most of our listeners are not, we were wondering if you could walk us through what the practical repercussions of this memo are. What does it mean? And in a very nuts and bolts kind of basic sense, what does it mean for a college athlete who might be interested in organizing?
Right. Okay. So in terms of the practical repercussions, I will just start by saying, you know, my memo provides guidance. You know, my goals are to educate and to protect and enforce the statute. And I, as the general counsel, have no independent investigatory authority. So players or others would need to bring a case to us. And whether that's an unfair labor practice case where players feel that they have been threatened or intimidated or retaliated against for trying to organize or improve their working conditions, or a representation case where players want to have an election to decide whether or not to choose a union as their collective bargaining representative, those players or someone acting on their behalf would need to file something with my office in order to get to jumpstart the process. So then once a case is filed in any one of our 48 field offices around the country, our board agents would then investigate the charge or process the election petition and would make a determination about whether or not the players are employees, and they would use my memo as guidance in terms of making that determination. And then proceeding with either litigating a case or conducting an election, depending upon whether it's a charge or a petition. And as general counsel, I have the prosecutorial discretion to decide what cases get litigated and brought before the board members. Ultimately, though, it's going to be up to the board members to make a final decision as to the employee status of the players. But I am confident that they will agree with me and we'll see more college athletes and other workers who may have been led to believe that they're not protected under our statute start to feel empowered to change their playing and working conditions. So that is really, you know, the goal is to make sure that players, and we only cover, and you might get to this, private entities, but certainly we are want to ensure that those that are statutory employees certainly know what their rights are, and that would include the right to organize and choose a collective bargaining representative if they want.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. And, you know, one thing, you talked about how athletes essentially need to bring a case to one of your offices to get sort of very, again, even more nuts and bolts. Could you sort of explain what that looks like? I guess I'm sort of thinking of, you know, athletes may not kind of know what needs to be done in order to do that. So it'd be great if you could kind of give us a little bit of a description of what that might look like.
Sure. So any worker, including these players, can go to our website or go into one of our offices. You know, we've got a public website. It's www.nlrb.gov. And you could go there and find a lot of information. Within that, or on there, are forms, charge forms and petition forms. And you can certainly download those, fill them out, e-file them, get them docketed. Or you could go into one of our 48 field offices. And again, there's a map on our public website that actually shows everyone where our offices are located, addresses, contact information, etc. And you could go there, and there's information officers at every day at every single office. And they will, you say, I want to file an election petition for a unit of players at my particular private university or for the conference or, you know, whatever, that information officer would help you fill out that petition, and then you would file it, and then that would start the process. You have, for example, if you were to file a petition, you would then, within 48 hours, have to provide what's called a, quote, showing of interest, which means that 30% of the unit would have to say, either through a card or signed cards and dated cards, or through some sort of document that's signed by each one and dated, that they are interested in having an election, or otherwise want the union, a particular named union, to act as their collective bargaining representative to negotiate with their particular university or college about their playing conditions. And so then once they did that, if there was a sufficient showing of interest of 30%, then the field agent would then process that petition and set up try to get an agreement between both the university and the whoever filed the petition to go to an NLRB-conducted election, which is a secret ballot election. And then a majority of those who vote would ultimately be determining whether or not the union is chosen as their representative. So that's how the process, you know, so if there's 20 voters and 12 of them vote for the union and 8 of them vote against, and there's no sort of challenges or other objectionable conduct, then the union would be certified by the board and they would become the collective bargaining representative. And then the university or college or conference or what have you would have to bargain with that representative towards a collective bargaining agreement, which would improve the working conditions of that particular unit. So that's how the election process would work. With regard to an unfair labor practice charge, if in fact, let's say players are starting to organize or starting to garner support for unionization and they're threatened, like, if you keep this up, we're going to pull you off the team, or somehow intimidated in some other fashion, they could file, again, they could go into the office or they could find the form on our website, but they could file a charge saying, you know, on X date, I was threatened with being pulled off the team for engaging in protect a concerted activity. That's like a term of art that we use, but it's basically to I'm engaging with my co-players to try to improve our working conditions, and my university or college has threatened me with adverse action if I continue to do so. And that would be a violation under our statute, presuming that they're employees, which certainly I believe that they are.